Berkeley.
Right. That is the exact group that mentioned that. And their view is that only the federal government determines foreign policy. Our view is that this isn't an issue of foreign policy. It's a state's right to invest based upon financial risk and moral factors that they deem okay for them.
Is the Trade Council suing Illinois?
The Trade Council is indeed suing Illinois for its divestment bill right now. And our worry is that if they are successful in Illinois, that will give cold feet to other state legislatures who are right now actively considering divestment.
Mohamed Yahya, do you support a divestment campaign of companies involved with Sudan?
Absolutely, I support the divestment, and especially those companies who are working and investing their money in a large scale in Sudan. This is really one of the bad things that affecting those Darfurians and those victims who are already victimized by the government of Sudan, and they use this money to fuel the war. And the government get this money to use to get weapons and to get weapons of mass destruction and to use it against those civilians in Darfur. And we are against this kind of acts, and we encourage and we are all those companies or even governments who are working in Sudan to divest immediately, because the money. This, we consider this money is a bad money, because a blood money is a bad money.
Jason Miller, what companies are doing business with Sudan?
It's important to emphasize that our group is not interested in targeting all companies, because some are doing substantial good in Sudan. But the ones that are really helping the government without providing benefit to Sudan citizens tend to be oil and energy companies from China, Russia, India, Malaysia, and to some degree France. And not surprisingly, these are the same countries, especially China and Russia, that are impeding a lot of international action on the issue of Darfur. They're protecting their commercial interests in the country.
Mohamed Yahya, we just have a few seconds. What, at this point, are you saying needs to be done? Do you believe that a UN peacekeeping force in Sudan will make the difference? Is it at all possible? We're talking just a matter of days before the end of September when the African Union forces leave.
Certainly, the peacekeepers, if deployed immediately to Sudan, they're going to make a difference. And our people over there, they are waiting for a long time to get those peacekeepers in Darfur. And they even demonstrated in their camps, those IDPs and those refugees in the cities, in the towns, in their shelters in Chad, they made a statement and they said, welcome, welcome, USA, welcome, welcome, United Nations. Because the only way out from this really terrible war and this genocide to send the international peacekeepers, the foreigners. And this going to hopefully United States of America to lead this mission. And immediately, before those African Union was drawn from Darfur. And this is the only solution.
I want to thank you both very much for being with us. Mohamed Yahya in our studio in New York, Darfuri refugee, and Jason Miller here in Stanford University, where we're broadcasting from today. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shruf Abdokadoush, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Richin, Aaron Mate, Frank Lopez, Jen Hute. Special thanks to Dennis Moynihan and Chuck Skurich. Our website is democracynow.org. Tonight we'll be in Atlanta at the Iconium Baptist Church, tomorrow night in Tampa at the Tampa Theater. Go to our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
WUSB Stony Brook.
And yes, you are listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook, where it's just about 6 o'clock, which means, once again, it's time for Off the Wall. Thank you. Okay, very good evening to everybody. The program is off the wall. And, well, there's just so much paperwork here, or just papers that I'm carrying with me. So many things to talk about, so many things going on. And we'll be taking your phone calls a little bit later. Hopefully all the equipment will stay in one piece. If not, I have my secret weapon. Yeah. I still have this, and I will play it if there's a threat of any dead air because of malfunctioning equipment. And, you know, ever since I made this threat, miraculously, everything works perfectly around here. All right, so let's not abuse the power here. Okay, interesting week, fascinating week, all sorts of things happening. All sorts of things happening today. You got that crazy UN meeting in New York City going on right now where Bush and the Iranian president are playing all sorts of snubbing games. You've got a coup going on in Thailand, which is taking place because the prime minister of Thailand went to New York to go to this UN thing. And while he was away, the sneaky military leaders decided, yeah, we're gonna march on in now and declare martial law. And it's weird watching this unfold over the day because the first report I heard was that it was unsuccessful. Now it seems like it was successful. Latest reports saying that the chiefs of Thailand's army, navy, and air force met with the king to declare they were taking over the country. Now, what happens if he says, no, I don't like that? What happens then? Is he able to overrule them? Not much point being a king if you can't overrule anybody. Anyway, the coup is being led by Thai Army Chief General Sonthi Bunyarakalan. Wow. Who announced that the military and opposition party of Democratic Reform were... That should have been a clue right there, you know. Yeah, when they started, like, registering the website, that should have been the clue that something was up. The Party of Democratic Reform were taking over while Prime Minister... Thaksin Shinawatra was in New York for a UN meeting. Now, tanks and troops are patrolling Bangkok. Police were closing stores and directing traffic off of Bangkok streets, according to residents. The coup plotters declared martial law and suspended the constitution of the Southeast Asian nation. They also declared Wednesday a holiday. It's already Wednesday there, with schools, banks, and the country's stock market being closed. The Armed Forces Commander and the National Police Commander have successfully taken over Bangkok and the surrounding area in order to maintain peace and order. There has been no struggle, the coup announcement said. We ask for the cooperation of the public and ask your pardon for the inconvenience. Oh, I love it. We ask your pardon for the inconvenience of a coup. What a polite society. Wow. You think we'll ever have a coup here? I mean, let's just think about it. We can still think about it, right? We can dream. No, really, a coup would probably be a bad thing. Probably would be. But let's think about how it might work. Okay? Bush is in New York now. It's not really a foreign country, but it's the closest thing we have. While he's away from Washington, D.C., who would take over? Well, I guess the people who have the tanks, and that's same people, the Army, the Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, National Guard, local police, you know, people like that. And they could circle the White House and the Capitol building and Pentagon, I suppose. But then what happens? Well, they could suspend the Constitution. We think that's incredibly alien to us. But it's really not so far in the future. An emergency situation, I think most people would say, yeah, you have to do that. You have to suspend certain rights for security, so you have to suspend the Constitution because it's an emergency. Yeah, people will go for that. No problem there. Then you can shoot people at will in the streets and arrest people for all sorts of reasons. Now, keep in mind, in Thailand, they've gotten very good at this. There have been 17 coups there since World War II, so they're polished as far as launching coups. It would be somewhat new for us. And I guess just the overall divisiveness in Congress lately and the general sense that we don't know what we're doing anymore, that might be enough. That might be enough for people to say, you know, George, step aside. Let somebody who knows how to drive take over from here. Of course, that could get us something much, much worse. But come on, it would be fun. Especially if it was a polite coup. Please listen carefully, as our government has changed. Yes, all choices must be heard. I don't know, it's just something that seems to happen all around the world. When people get upset with their government, they tend to speak up a bit louder than we are. And I think we're just kind of hypnotized by all of the all the products that we're being forced to buy. Now, in Hungary, for instance, there's a whole big thing going on over there as well. Hungary's prime minister has refused to resign after Monday's anti-government riots and has vowed to push ahead with tough economic reforms, despite admitting in a leaked recording that officials lied about the economy. How smart is that, really, to admit that out loud, where somebody could be recording it? I'm staying and I'll do my job, said Ferenc. I'm really sorry about this, but, you know, it's not my fault. I was brought up not to be able to pronounce these names. Ferenc Gyasany said on Tuesday, yeah, the Hungarian listeners are going to write in. I'm sorry, all right? I need some kind of upgrade. I'm extremely committed to fulfill my program. These are difficult adjustments and reforms. I know it's very difficult for the people, but this is the only route or direction for Hungary. So shut up. The riots, in which 150 people, including 102 police officers, were injured. Wow, that's a riot. That's a real riot. When more cops get injured than protesters? Yeah, that's definitely, that qualifies as a riot. The riots were the longest and darkest night for the country since the end of communism in 1989, said the embattled leader. He went on to tell reporters that the unrest at the Budapest headquarters of Hungarian state television took police by surprise, and he vowed to use all means possible to reestablish order after protesters clashed with police and stormed the headquarters of Hungarian state television. Yes, it's MTV. That's what they're called, MTV. The original MTV is in Budapest. Wow, the street is not a solution, but instead causes conflict and crisis, the prime minister told state-run news agency MTI. Our job is to resolve the conflict and prevent a crisis. The turmoil exploded on Sunday when state radio aired an audio tape of this guy with the unpronounceable name telling members of his ruling socialist party that his government had lied about the state of the country's economy throughout its 2 years in office. We lied throughout the past 1.5 or 2 years. We lied in the morning, we lied in the evening, and also at night. Yeah, you know, I'm wondering if people might be missing the picture here. It doesn't sound like this guy is boasting about that. It sounds like he's kind of angry. He's yelling at people, saying, we lied. Look at us. What's happened to us? It sounds like he's doing some soul searching. Either that or he's incredibly stupid and was boasting. I don't know. But, wow. So, yeah, you have that going on. Situations in Hungary, situations in Thailand. And, oh, God, what is with the Pope? My goodness. It used to be that you'd had to be smart to be a pope, but now, apparently, you can just go out and spout all sorts of things without thinking about the possible ramifications of what you're saying. Yeah, he goes out and he quotes this ancient text that says all these really nasty things about Islam, and he's quoting it for, I don't know what the purpose is. That never seems to get reported as to what exactly the point was he was making. But the fact is, when you're a pope, you have to sort of take things into consideration. That your words might carry a bit more weight than other people's in certain circles, and you have to sort of weigh your comments a bit. You know? And that's apparently what this guy does not seem to get. And then he issues these half-apologies. Yeah, I'm sorry that people are offended. You know, it's those relationship apologies. The passive-aggressive thing. I'm sorry you feel that way. I'm sorry you don't understand what I'm saying. I'm sorry you're such an idiot. Those aren't apologies. And I don't think the Muslim community is really treating them like they're apologies. But when I saw this, I'm like, oh my God, this is where the true holy war begins. When the Pope starts dissing Muslims and Muhammad and all this. Oh my God. What's it going to take to wake people up? Yeah, this is not a Danish newspaper printing cartoons. And yes, the Pope does have the right to say whatever he wants to say, but you gotta understand, he's the Pope. So what he says is going to affect people in different ways. You got to be somewhat responsible. It's like if the president used a four-letter word or something like that, you know, that would never happen, of course, but it would affect people in a different way than if, say, someone like me did it. All right. This has been a week of hell for me as well. I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot this past week. Actually, my God, this has been going on longer than this, hasn't it? I was going to talk about this last week, but I thought, you know, it's not that big a deal, so I'm not going to mention it. But I learned something last week, and I learned something even more this week. Learned a few things, actually. It's been a very educational week. When using the company FedEx to mail something to Canada, don't make the mistake of filling out the usual air bill, which I've done many, many times. Apparently, the way this works, the driver decides whether or not your package is going to go through or whether they're going to be real jerks about it and send it back because you didn't fill out the international air bill, which is really no different, except I think you have to check a box saying, I'm not a terrorist or something. Who knows? It's a little tiny thing. Actually, it was a check. I was sending somebody a check in Montreal, right over the border. It had to be there overnight. This was 2 weeks ago. This was 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So I sent this thing, and I'm like, okay, that's the end of it. I didn't even think. Didn't think that I had to fill out a different air bill for something that was so close. Yeah, my fault. I admit it's my fault. But do they contact me? No, they don't contact me. I have to look the thing up after the person I was mailing it to said, where is it? It's not here. I looked it up and I see that it's for some reason being refused and being sent back. And I called them and I said, what's going on here? And that's when I found out about the air bill business. So I'm like, okay, great. So now, instead of me just telling you over the phone that, yeah, in fact, this is an international shipment, which obviously it is, and please check that little box for me, you're going to send it back to me. Great. Their phrasing is, we're going to send it back to the point of origin. Point of origin? I mean, that's like a Kinko's. I sent this to a Kinko's. I went to a Kinko's. Are you going to go back and leave it in a Kinko's on top of the little box they have there? They said, well, no, sir, we'll send it back to the address that's on the FedEx form. Well, guess what? My return address is a P.O. box. That's my mailing address. You guys going to be able to handle that? No, we can't do that. We can't send something to a P.O. box. Oh, my God. How dare you even suggest such a thing? Why? Why in God's name, when we're talking about missions to Mars, have we not figured out a way that FedEx can send something to a damn P.O. box? Where, in fact, I might add, they even have FedEx boxes inside the post office or right outside the door. Yeah, they have them right there, but for some reason, they're not allowed to put their packages in a P.O. box. Whose antiquated law is this exactly? Yeah, I know technically it's not supposed to be a substitute for the mail, but come on already. They're putting it in mailboxes in front of people's homes, or maybe that's illegal too. And the point is, how else am I going to get this damn package? Nobody seemed to have an answer for that, but no, we can't send it to a P.O. box. So my package was, it wasn't even a package, it was an envelope. It was an envelope with a single tiny piece of paper in it that was taking a tour of FedEx facilities all around the place. Then they tried to send it, I heard this secondhand, they tried to send it to a house I hadn't lived in 10 years. Apparently they looked up their, they went to this much trouble, they looked up their records to see my history and discovered that and actually went and tried to give my package to a stranger, a total stranger. And at that point, I think the driver stepped in again. The drivers have a lot of power at FedEx. And actually, apparently this is the same driver for the last 10 years, and he remembered me. He actually remembered me. And he was able to contact somebody else who knew me. I was able to get it that way. Through the most primitive means of people knowing each other and handing packages to each other, I was able to get my package back that way. And then, okay, fine. Fill out the stupid form. Send the thing out. Let's forget this ever happened. And I don't even want to know if they charge me for that, because that would just get me very angry if they did. And I don't want to get that angry. And it's only a few dollars probably, but still, my God, the nerve. So yeah, filled out the form and finished dealing with it until I heard this week from the same guy up in Canada, it still isn't here. It still isn't here. I sent it a week ago. I sent it a week ago with the proper forms. It still isn't there. So I checked the FedEx website and it's in customs. It's in customs, awaiting clearance for 5 days. What in God's name is going on? It's a check. Have I never seen one of these things before? I don't even know. Are they opening up my package and inspecting everything and running a credit report and all sorts of nonsense like that? Why has it gotten so difficult to send simple packages or simple letters or envelopes across the border? So the latest thing, I called them and said, look, this is ridiculous. What's going on here? And they agreed. Yeah, this is ridiculous. And this is the first we're hearing about it. This is the first they're hearing. Don't they have a computer that tells them these packages never made it to their destination? They're your tracking numbers, and this is the first you're hearing about it. You should be on top of this. I shouldn't have to wait to hear from somebody and then have to call you and tell you that, yeah, your package that you're supposed to deliver to somebody never made it. But no, I had to alert them to this, and now they're doing all sorts of searches in two countries. And I'm sorry. I've tried so hard to get this piece of paper across the border, and it's just proven impossible. So I have to give a product unendorsement here. Do not ever try to use FedEx to send something to Canada, because you're in for a world full of hurt if you try. More on this saga in future weeks, as I'm sure that's what it's going to take before we reach a resolution. Speaking of a world full of hurt. Wow, I almost really got it this morning. Ignorance is not bliss all the time. I was lurking about in one of the forests around Long Island. Don't knock it till you've tried it. It's actually a very nice thing to do, lurking. Well, maybe not the lurking part, but being in a forest is a very nice thing. And we should be very happy that we have forests here on Long Island that we can lurk in or sit in or just casually stroll through. And a particularly nice time to be there is crack of dawn. Because that's when all the animals are waking up and all the predator animals are pretty much finishing up operations for the night. And lo and behold, I came across a flock, gaggle, pride, what are they called? When it's a herd, okay, a herd of deer. Not a herd so much, but maybe like four of them. Two really small ones, one kind of medium-sized one, one fairly normal size, although a little tiny. And they were just sort of like casually strolling through the forest. And I don't know if you've ever encountered deer. They're fascinating creatures. They just stop and they stare straight at you. It's really kind of weird. And you can be very far away and they'll do this. You can be standing inside a building where you don't think they can see you, and they do somehow. Their eyes kind of bore through and they just give you this look. And so I'm standing there admiring these creatures because they really are very, very nice. And it's just kind of cool to have them around, I think. No desire to shoot them like so many people seem to have. And this goes on for a little while. I realize they're not really afraid of me. They probably should be. And then one of them sort of steps forward a little bit. And I think, wow, this is kind of like, you know, kind of like a dog being friendly. And they actually look friendly. Their tails are wagging. Their little tiny tails are wagging. I don't know what that means in deer language. But then something strange happens. This deer, looking intently at me, really intently at me, lifts up its right hoof and just stamps it into the ground really hard. I'm like, wow, that's kind of strange. And I'm looking at this deer, and the deer is looking at me and does it again. Keeps doing it, keeps stamping, and it looks really kind of hostile. Kind of hostile. Deer, Bambi, I mean, they're not hostile. They're friendly creatures, aren't they? That's why they keep getting killed all the time. They don't know how to be hostile. Deer, I mean, that's a nice word. Misspelled, okay, fine, but it means terms of endearment. So I'm like looking at this deer and I'm saying, okay, what's your problem here? What's going on? Well, are you actually threatening me? Am I being threatened in the forest by a deer? I mean, this is embarrassing for both of us. And I can't back down from this. I'd never live it down. Somebody would hear about it. And so we stare at each other, and the deer keeps moving a little closer and looking kind of ferocious. And this isn't happening. Deer do not attack people. And I'm like, dude, you don't even have antlers. You're no threat whatsoever to me. And I was thinking to myself, what happens if this deer decides to charge at me? What would I do? And I'm weighing some considerations. I could, I guess, charge at it at the same time. I don't know what would have happened. Maybe, you know, in an attempt to chase it away, maybe that would work. Maybe it would just result in a horrific collision. I could try and throw debris at it or something. I could try to run away, but that's probably not going to work. I know they can't climb trees, but then again, I can't either. Well, okay, the deer basically made some kind of snorting noise, and then all four of them ran away, which I guess is as much speech as they can muster. I went home, and I looked up in the internet. Thank God for the internet, because it tells you everything. I simply looked up deer attacks on humans, and you know what? It does happen. They do attack humans, especially when they feel their young might be at risk. And apparently, this was a young mother. She was kind of tiny herself. I didn't know she was a mother, but apparently she was, and those were her young. And she was basically taking a stand. And there I was in the forest, not even knowing that, and not even knowing that deer could attack people. So I really learned something. And here's an article I found about an Illinois university and how they're launching a safety campaign after several deer attacks. Yeah, this is true. Tammy Emery used to think deer were sweet and adorable, like Bambi. Yeah, Tammy, I can identify with that. It's exactly how I felt until this morning. An encounter with a charging doe changed that. The 31-year-old secretary was among at least seven people threatened or injured by female deer last year on the campus of Southern Illinois University, attacks that have prompted the school to wage a safety campaign during the fawning season this spring. And this was the spring of 2006. Now, it's almost autumn now, so I don't know what season it is in the deer calendar. The attacks in the woods at the 20,000-student university have been attributed to a smaller habitat, a mother's instinct to protect her young, and in some cases, too much human curiosity. And while I'm talking about a university in Illinois, this could hold true to a university right here at Stony Brook, where I am right now. In fact, I even saw a deer a few months ago, maybe half a mile from campus, which a few years ago was unheard of. This is happening because so much destruction is going on Long Island. So many buildings are being built to house all the homeless millionaires that need those townhouses and then to build the malls for them to shop at, that the deer are being chased out of their original habitat and brought into suburbia a bit more. And so, yeah, you actually see them in this area when that never happened before. And, of course, literally a day after I saw this deer for the first time, I saw the same deer dead on the road with a stupid SUV driver scratching their head. Saw a strange animal, so I had to hit it. Unbelievable. But anyway, continuing with this story. The message is keep an eye out for deer, don't approach them, and if a wild-eyed deer starts bounding your way, run. Doesn't really work, though. They run pretty fast. Before last year, no one really had heard of this sort of thing, said Clay Nielsen, a wildlife ecologist at the university. Nielsen said he believes different deer were responsible for the three attacks that sent Emery and at least three others to the hospital, mostly with minor injuries. It wasn't like it was one crazy animal, Nielsen said, but some of the attacks may have been avoided if the victims hadn't committed an absolute no-no, moving in on a fawn to pet it. I was not doing that, all right? I'm not stupid. I wasn't doing that. I was simply standing my ground. These deer were advancing on me. And I'm sorry. I'm not yielding any ground to no deer. So now with fawning season nearing its peak, last year's attacks happened between June 7th and June 15th, Nielsen and other campus officials are using signs, radio spots, emails, and flyers about the deer in Thompson Woods. Later this month, Nielsen, which this is actually a few months ago, so it already happened, you missed it, but Nielsen will head a seminar titled Avoiding Deer-Human Encounters of the Third Kind on Campus. Real sense of humor out there in Illinois. The effort also includes a two-year study by Nielsen and other researchers to count the deer, pinpoint how the animals affect the campus's ecosystem, and gauge what locals think of them. Well, golly, these things are, they're mammals on 4 feet, and They run really fast and they hop really high. What do you think, a deer? Nielsen said the study will offer no recommendations on what to do about the deer, leaving that difficult issue for administrators. All of this is occurring too late for Emory. This is a really in-depth story, by the way. A secretary in the political science department who still winces when she recounts what happened to her on that June afternoon when she took a shortcut through Thompson Woods. Emory heard a rustling and saw, "This deer was headed right toward me, full charge." Emory never saw any fawn, only the adult deer with eyes wide. "I could tell it was angry, but I wasn't sure what about." Didn't have a chance to ask, huh? "I know by the time I was in the area, she was really mad and going to take it all out on me. I couldn't have run if I tried. Why don't these deer do this to the hunters? I never hear of hunters being charged by deer." In an instant, the deer knocked the woman to the ground and delivered a flurry of kicks. Emory, screaming, curled into a ball as the snorting animal rained blows on her, slicing open one of her ears and leaving her with huge bruises and a hoof print on her hand. "I thought, this is crazy. This can't be real. I'm being attacked by a deer." The deer was scared off by passers-by, for some reason. Emory has not been back in that stretch of the woods since. The deer have won that battle. While taking a shortcut through the woods this week, which actually was in June, Stephanie Eastwood, a biochemistry major, wondered what all the fuss was about, saying deer were the least of her worries. "Deer are docile creatures. They don't just attack," said Eastwood, 26 years old and naive as hell. "I find it amusing to see the animals in the park, but all I've seen here is squirrels and snakes bother me more." Nielsen suspects various factors conspired in last year's attacks, including an increase in the deer population and the clearing of trees and windbreaks around the campus's edges. That shrinking habitat has forced the animals into Thompson Woods, which is a 20 or so acre with hundreds of yards of paved trails. Emory says she thinks differently about deer these days. "When they're mad, they're vicious. They're not the pretty creatures they were to me before." And that was a really in-depth article on deer attacks from Illinois. From the Boston Globe, actually. No, actually, that's the Associated Press, as reprinted in the Boston Globe. So, interesting. "I'll never look at deer the same way again, but I'm not going to be intimidated by them. And I don't know what else I can possibly do." But yeah, I guess that's a word of warning to those of you out there admiring deer. They can be vicious. They can turn on you. What animal cannot? Okay, we'll be taking phone calls in just a little bit. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. So yeah, I learned a lot about deer this week. I learned how bad FedEx is delivering to Canada. I also learned, this is something I already knew, I had a real bad computer problem this last week where the system I'm using just all of a sudden up and blacked out the screen. And I figured it was the video card. So I swapped out the video card, put another one in there, and it worked fine and was asking me to install new drivers and things like that. And then all of a sudden, I got all these fatal errors and the machine would not boot anymore. And after a series of tests and swaps and frustration that went on for days, literally, the inconclusive evidence was that the hard drive had gotten fried somehow. And that's when I realized the machine has gone crazy. The machine simply is spiking things and blowing out things. And after a good relationship of a number of years, this machine is going into the trash heap and I have to get a new machine. But the important thing about all this, and this is what I always try to convey to people, is the importance, the urgency, the necessity of always keeping backups. Because there was a period of time when I didn't have access to the tape backups that I make on a regular basis. And I also didn't have access to a machine that could handle that particular tape drive. I use what's known as DLT tapes. Very rugged, very sturdy. But here's the thing. We discovered a few months ago, actually, that another machine that we had been doing backups on, this is a BSD machine, we thought we had been doing backups for years on pretty much a daily basis onto a different type of DLT drive, a smaller format. And we were wondering, you know, over the years, we keep adding hard drives and keep adding users and more space, but we never seem to fill up these tapes. You know, that's incredible. Is it using compression really efficiently? And one day I just decided, I'm going to look into this. I'm not the most technical person in the world. I really am not, by a long stretch. And I work with a lot of people who are. And nobody I know really looked into this until it just bothered me one day. I said, this can't be right. We can't keep squeezing all this data into this one tape for years and never have to use a second tape. There's something wrong here. And sometimes it takes that non-technical, naive way of looking at things to realize the emperor has no clothes, you know? And yeah, the emperor was strutting around butt naked on our system because apparently what was happening was this. The backup script, it was a daily backup script, was running. And it was backing up until it filled up the tape. And then, do you know what it was doing? What does a normal system do? A normal system says, okay, the tape's full, give me another tape now. Who does it say it to? It says it usually to the person who started the program, or it says it to everybody on the system, or it says it in a particular place you're looking for it. In this particular case, the geniuses who wrote this script had it write that request to a log file. Yeah, so if you look in a file called, I guess, backup-log, a file you would never have any reason to look at, you'll see a request every single day for a second tape. And that second tape never came because we had been assuming all that time that the backup was finished. So for years, we had been backing up a system but not really backing it up. And if we had lost one of the hard drives, we would have found out in the most horrible way that, in fact, we did not have that data. And that's why you have to be really, really careful. You have to not only back up your data, but test it. Make sure it's being backed up. Restore it and back it up in a different way, too. Copy everything to another hard drive. You can never have too many copies of something. I know people who are engaged in sensitive things will be nervous about that. That's why you use encryption. And don't forget the password. So, yeah, that was going through my head when I was having trouble over the past week, because this disk had a lot of stuff on it that I really did not want to lose, stuff that goes back decades. And, yeah, I was keeping backups, but what if something had gone wrong with that backup? It just seemed like a series of really bad coincidences happening at the same time. And it wasn't until the weekend I was able to actually secure a machine and plug in the DLT drive and do a full restore, which took a day in itself, and actually see all my files come back. And that's when I was able to finally exhale after all that time. But I got to tell you, it's happened to me in the past. This is how I learned these lessons, that you have to keep backups rigorously. Because every single hard drive in the world eventually will fail. And if you have a computer system right now, if you're listening to me on a computer system, the hard drive you're using is one day going to fail. If it fails tomorrow, what shape are you going to be in? I don't mean fail to the degree where, yeah, you have to reboot and hit a couple of commands and get everything back. No, it'll fail and you won't be able to get anything back. Maybe you can go to one of these really expensive data recovery places and spend a couple of $1,000 and get something that way. Maybe. But wouldn't it be so much easier to simply have something stored and store it in a different place? Don't store it in your house. Because you might piss off Israel and they might launch a missile and hit your house and then you're screwed, okay? So put it someplace else. Put it in a safety deposit box. Put it in another person's house that you trust. And that way you always have it. And do it on a regular basis. Do it on a regular basis. Because even if you let a month go by, that's still a month's worth of material that you will not get back. And it can be a real pain to have to reconstruct all of that. I learned this from the past. I learned this from losing things. And there's no worse feeling. For instance, if you write a whole big thing and then all of a sudden it's gone. I'm sure this has happened to everybody who's used a computer at some point where you type for hours and hours, you come up with the most brilliant thing you've ever written and whammo, something happens and it's gone. And you have to somehow either recreate it or jump off a bridge because the feeling of loss is just so total and so unrecoverable, to coin a phrase. So that's, I guess I didn't really learn that. It just got re-emphasized. But it's really dramatic when it happens to you, and it always does happen. And final thing I learned this week, I was going through paperwork. You have to do this occasionally. And if you ever sign an insurance policy, this is the insurance policy we have for various offices and things, and it's just amazing what these guys have thought of. I mean, insurance companies figured out ways they didn't have to pay people for hurricane damage when people took out insurance for just that reason. They're always figuring out ways to get out of paying you. Now, listen to this. We do not, perils not covered and exclusions. Then they've thought this all through. We do not pay for loss if one or more of the following exclusions apply to the loss, regardless of other causes or events that contribute to or aggravate the loss, whether such causes or events act to produce the loss before, at the same time as, or after the excluded causes or events. You with me? Too bad. I'm going ahead anyway. Civil authority. We do not cover loss caused by order of any civil authority, including seizure, confiscation, or destruction of property. So if the government comes in and messes your stuff up, they don't cover that. No. Earth movement or volcanic eruption. We do not cover loss caused by any earth movement other than sinkhole collapse or caused by eruption, explosion, or effusion of a volcano. Yeah, why not? Come on, how many times do volcanoes erupt around here or even in the States at all? It would be a nice gesture if you guys just covered those few people that had their possessions encased in molten lava. You don't think that would win you some favor? And why do you cover sinkholes? How come we got a concession on sinkholes? All right. Earth movement includes, but is not limited to, earthquake, landslide, mud flow, mudslide, or sinking, rising, or shifting of earth. Okay, so I'm a little confused here. Wouldn't sinking of earth be a sinkhole? For some reason, they cover sinkholes, but they don't cover things defined as sinking of earth. All right. Nuclear hazard. This is where it really gets good. We do not cover loss. For some reason, we is always in boldface. I don't know if they want me to emphasize that. Okay, I'll do it. We do not cover. Maybe they mean somebody else does. It's sort of a clue. We do not cover loss caused by nuclear hazard. This means nuclear reaction, nuclear radiation, or radioactive contamination, all whether controlled or uncontrolled. Loss caused by nuclear hazard is not considered loss caused by fire, explosion, or smoke. Did you know that? Loss caused by nuclear hazard is not considered loss caused by fire, explosion, or smoke. This exclusion does not apply to direct loss by fire resulting from nuclear hazards. Yeah, you really got to think this through. War. We do not cover loss caused by war, including undeclared war, civil war, insurrection, rebellion, revolution, warlike act by a military force or military personnel, or destruction, seizure, or use of property for a military purpose. We do not cover loss due to the consequences of any of these. And here's the kicker. Discharge of a nuclear weapon shall be deemed a warlike act, even if accidental. I mean, were they thinking late at night? Yeah, what if somebody accidentally nukes New York? We don't want to cover that, do we? No, we're not going to cover that. So we're going to consider that an act of war, even if it's an accident. I mean, really, they've thought of everything. And it goes on. I mean, that's just the spectacular stuff. There's all sorts of unattended vehicles, arithmetic errors, things they don't cover there as well. But wow, you really should read the insurance thing sometimes. It's hilarious. And I guess if you ever do want to fill a claim out, it's not like keeping a backup. A backup will not argue with you if you do it right. An insurance company will, no matter what you do. So, yeah. And what else has been going on? Hear about this. Willie Nelson got busted. Yeah, Willie Nelson and four others were issued misdemeanor citations for possession of narcotic mushrooms and marijuana after a traffic stop Monday morning on a Louisiana highway. The citations were issued after their tour bus was pulled over. I mean, you pull over Willie Nelson's tour bus, you know you're going to find something inside there. Willie wasn't playing that fair, was it? A search of the bus produced 1.5 pounds of marijuana and 0.2 pounds of narcotic mushrooms. And a bunch of other people were also cited. It's amazing to me what they waste their time on. I mean, yeah, if somebody's driving impaired, that's an issue. But I think the guy's given enough where he can be allowed to indulge a little bit. In fact, we all should be allowed to indulge a little bit. These are not the evil drugs. Again, our phone number is 631-632-9872. Phone lines are open, so if you want to give us a call, please do so. We got a lot of letters. I'd like to read a couple of them from people responding to various points that we've made. Let's see here. Oh, here's a good one. Dear Off the Wall, to anyone who believes anything presented in the pseudo-documentary Loose Change, I implore you to view the video Screw Loose Change at tinyurl.com/GWSVS, tinyurl.com/GWSVS, which refutes every falsehood on a point-by-point basis. I don't believe the creators of Loose Change are out for anything but money, as indicated by their protest this month at the World Trade Center site, in which they spread misinformation to those grieving and beg them to buy their T-shirts and exploitive film. Thanks, P, for writing in on that. And yeah, I took a look at the Screw Loose Change film on the URL that you gave, which is part of Google Video. And it's described as a counter video of the famous Loose Change second edition. Using their own video and words, Screw Loose Change debunks the theories and statements made in Loose Change second edition. And that's one of a bunch of pieces of mail that we got on the subject. Here's another one. Dear Emmanuel and Off the Wall, I'm sure you're sick of hearing about 9/11 conspiracy theories. But please hear me out. I've heard you out. I've heard a million other people out. And, wow, a lot of hearing out going on. After listening to last week's Off the Wall, as well as previous shows where you dismissed them so readily, I had to write. Okay, let me just stop you right there. Dismiss them so readily? How do you know how readily I'm dismissing them? Maybe I'm dismissing them after considering everything they've said. After looking into it a little bit. Now, obviously, I'm on the radio, and I can't do the research on the air, which takes hours and hours and hours. So to you, it might seem like I'm dismissing it readily. I don't dismiss everything either. I just dismiss certain things which I find phenomenally dumb. But let's move on. It's not that I want to badger you, but merely give you my viewpoint on the subject. My problem with the 9/11 conspiracies are twofold. Number one, a conclusion is drawn about the perpetrators and their motives almost as quickly as was drawn about Osama and the hijackers right after 9/11. Okay. And number two, a multitude of poorly researched facts are used as throwaway evidence. Okay. Everyone knows that Bush, Cheney, etc. were directly behind 9/11. He's not saying this. He's using that as the basic facts that these people are putting forth. And it's evidenced by this and that, but if you have a counter-argument, I have 1,000 more intangibles to throw at you. When you read, Alexander Coburn's article last week, it seemed like in many ways you were agreeing with those sentiments. Specifically, the first item that Coburn goes into is this theory that military planes should have been there, shooting down the hijacked airliners minutes after it all began. However, this I consider of little significance because, as you pointed out, that relies on specific knowledge of military tactics, which it didn't seem the original writer had. But also, what else might have gone on that day behind the doors of civilian and military flight command centers? I can easily imagine flight controllers not immediately reporting missing aircraft while they tried to figure things out. I can also imagine a reluctance on the part of the military to shoot down an airliner. However, Coburn used some of the same poor arguments as the conspiracy theorist in his own writing. If Coburn's brother has seen this picture of the Pentagon with plane wreckage around it, nobody else out there has. I don't know. I don't think that's true. I'd like to see the picture myself. I mean, yeah, it's a good question. We should see more pictures, I suppose. It is the Pentagon. It was a series of craziness going on. I'm sure everybody in the Pentagon is sworn to secrecy about what goes on inside the Pentagon, so maybe that's why you haven't seen a lot of pictures. Maybe they weren't taking a whole lot of pictures at the time. They were just trying to get out with their lives. But I could have sworn, I might be misremembering, I could have sworn I saw a picture that seemed to have airplane wreckage. I've got, I taped CNN for a full week when 9/11 was going on. So if something was broadcast, I've got it someplace. Just a question of finding it. But if someone out there has seen a picture that shows airplane wreckage or whatever to appease people who believe that didn't really happen that way, let's cough it up. Okay, where was I here? Unfortunately, this all printed out as one big paragraph, so it's very hard to find my place again. Yeah. This really is a lot more difficult. Oh, here we go. Okay. How about the whole why would they mention Osama if the fall guy is Saddam argument? I don't for one second believe that Bush's intentions begin and end with Iraq. No, I couldn't begin to piece together all the whos and whys of the goings-on of the past 5 years, but I can say that if there is a conspiracy, it does not begin on September 11th nor end in Iraq. By the way, while we're on the topic of conspiracy, everyone knows that 9/11 was a conspiracy. It was a conspiracy between bin Laden, Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, and who knows. Certainly did not involve Iraq, but was a much larger conspiracy that we would be led to believe. We're not certain it didn't involve Iraq. It could have. There could have been some Iraqi influence, but it has not been uncovered. There was no smoking gun. And for a long time, saying it was Osama seemed to just be conjecture. So, those are the questions you really have to ask. The fact that Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, etc. would be willing to bold-faced lie about something as important, as historic, and as tragic as 9/11 makes you wonder what else they would do. My main fear is that this would go by like the JFK assassination, that people would simply swallow a big whopper from their own government without even flinching. For the past 5 years, that's what you've seen, but it's good to see that people now are at least investigating on their own the biggest crime in our nation's history. Whatever they may find in there, it needs to be looked into and never forgotten about. I agree with that. I agree with the investigating. It's the conclusions that I think are very premature and very not looked into enough. And that sort of besmirches everybody involved, because people say, look at the wackos that are coming up with all kinds of crazy theories, and they're easily disproven, as this video that the other writer sent us shows. Sorry, I keep losing my place because there's one big paragraph here. These people are hacking the media, although a lot of people get carried away and draw conclusions prematurely, and in the cases of quite a few university professors and surely others being persecuted for it. You guys, being the champions of asking questions, should, if nothing else, quit trashing them. Are we trashing them, or are we asking questions of them? Like, how is this possible? Where did the plane go if it didn't crash into the Pentagon? You know, what exactly are you saying happened in Pennsylvania? I think keeping a skeptical eye on things is what we're all about, both here and on Off the Hook. And I don't think we're trashing anybody out of hand. Other than that, I love the shows and I wish you the best of luck. I sincerely regret not being at, you say the fifth hope. I assume you mean hope number six, because that's the one that just happened. So hopefully we'll see you at the next one. That was from Phil. Thanks very much. Binary Bandito is your handle. And please write to us, otw@2600.com. I'm reminded of a very interesting quote by Carl Sagan. No, I'm sorry. There were a whole bunch of calls, and I was reading that long letter, and they all went away. If you get disconnected, which is what the phone company does these days, just call right back. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. I'm reminded of a quote by Carl Sagan, something along the lines of, if your mind is too open, your brains fall out. I don't think that's saying to be closed-minded. I think that's saying, okay, at some point, you have to start reaching conclusions. You have to start dismissing things that make no sense. You have to stop assuming that everything is part of some evil, well-put-together conspiracy. Because I've seen how things work in our government, and they can't hold anything together. If they could hold this together, they could certainly fix Iraq. And they're not doing a very good job with that. Okay, let's take some phone calls. 631-632-9872. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Okay. I wanted to mention something about how Emanuel was saying there weren't, you know, many deer on campus anymore.
Okay. You realize you're on the air, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay, because you referred to me in the third person, so I wasn't sure if you knew that you were talking to me.
I apologize.
Okay, don't worry about it.
There actually was a lot of deer on that property. I guess that would be west of the P parking lot before the powers that be at the university stole the property by use of the eminent domain by the people who own it. There were lots of deer there, but I'm sure that'll be all built up.
Yeah.
And there won't be any deer there. But the other thing I wanted to mention to you is I think when a deer stamps his foot, I didn't catch if you found out what cause that or not. I think it just means that they're threatened and they're not really sure what's going on.
Really? Well, it seemed to be a very emphatic statement to me, like, don't mess with me. It's really kind of funny looking, because I wasn't sure if it's a he or a she at that point, but I guess it was a she. She was just doing this maybe once every 5 seconds and really coming down hard on the ground. And I never saw anger in a deer's face before.
Oh, sure. I've seen it actually happen, and it's very interesting. I'll let other people get through, because I'm sure you get a lot of calls.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
And good evening. You're on the radio.
How you doing?
How are you?
Good. I just wanted to point out, it was about a week after 9/11, on Lister's reggae show on WUSB, There was a man who was a political analyst, who worked with Malcolm X, who outlined a paper trail from the Kennedy assassination straight to the World Trade Center with the utmost articulation. And it was before any of these conspiracy theories, whether it be Fahrenheit 9/11 or loose change or anything like that. And everything that this man spoke about has been mentioned in all of these particular documentaries. Mm-hmm. I think there is a certain level of truth to everything that people are talking about. It's just a little more expansive than we think.
I could see that. I could see that, you know, they're touching upon maybe a theme, but not getting the actual facts completely right.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I definitely be suspicious. Definitely assume there's more going on than meets the eye. There's guaranteed that's what's happening. But as far as specific things that really seem very simple to diffuse, like someone planting explosives on all the floors of the World Trade Center and the plane not hitting the Pentagon and the other plane disappearing somehow, it seems to me we have enough to work on with the terrorist act taking place as it seemed to take place in front of everybody, and asking questions as to how that came to be. You know, that's where I think the real investigation should be taking place.
Yeah, I think that the element of the details is almost a distraction from the whole situation, what's actually going on in the world community.
Exactly. Yes.
And I really don't. I mean, everybody seems to want to be pinning Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld. I don't think they have as much say in the matter, if you will.
Yeah, you know, also Clinton. Don't forget, there's people on both sides want to blame the other administration, and I'm of the thought that no, that's the wrong approach. I don't think anybody let it happen. I think government did what government does and missed some important things, and just bureaucracy took over at various stages, and that's just what happens in our type of system. Now, whether there were people inside that were more nefariously planning evil things and might be somehow behind this, well, that's something I guess it should be looked into, but it seems very unlikely from a high up point of view. You know, I think our foreign policy is what led us to this horrible part of our history.
Well, one cannot forget the corporate world.
Mm-hmm.
That is certainly running the show in Washington and abroad, you know.
Absolutely.
There is special interests, you know, and it's something that's why I say I think it's a lot deeper than we're searching right now.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. All right, listen, we're going to have to cut it off there. Thanks thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
All right, and I'm sorry we're not going to be able to make it to any more phone calls today. We'll try to take them earlier next week so we can have more engaging conversations going on for longer periods of time. Again, our email address is otw@2600.com. We would love to hear your various theories, thoughts, feedback, that kind of thing. That's what we're here for. Be back again tomorrow night on Off the Hook. Oh, this is something that I wanted to leave you with. Just to show you that the current nonsense that we're going through with corporate radio and FCC and regulations and what to play and what not to play, it's nothing new. It's really, I mean, it's certainly a lot more threatening and all-encompassing now, but it's not something that is completely alien to the radio world. I found this piece from, I think it's the 1940s, I couldn't pinpoint a year on this, by a guy named Norman Long. And basically, this is a musical piece that's kind of satirizing the BBC's reluctance to broadcast anything worse than what might corrupt the class of kindergarten infants. Yeah, this guy is basically, the song is about all the things that you cannot broadcast for various reasons. And when you think back, when this was recorded back in the 40s or maybe even 30s, wow, how little things actually do change. We'll see you next week.
Yeah. This is just a little skit on the very strict censorship with which radio entertainers have to contend. Now, the BBC once wrote to me and said, "Dear Norman Long, we thought you'd like to face the mic with your piano, smile and song. So will you bring your repertoire along for us to see, to go over it with a pencil of the blue variety?" So I looked my list of songs up, to the studio I flew. I said, "Here's a nice song called Violets." They said, "Oh, that's much too blue." I said, "Is Robin Adair all right?" They said, "Robin Adair, my head. Just think of the bald-headed men you'll upset. We can't let you broadcast that." So I looked my list of songs up, determined to show my skill. I started warbling merrily that well-known song until I sang, "No rose in all the world, no rose," they cried, "my head. Why, you'll upset all the fishmongers. We can't let you broadcast that." So I looked my list of songs up, because I was beginning to tire. I said, "Well, here's a good one, a song called Strike the Lyre." They said, "Strike the Lyre? What on earth do you think you're at? With thousands of barristers listening in, we can't let you broadcast that." So I looked my list of songs up, found one of modern times. There was a young fellow of somewhere. They shouted, "Stop, that's rhymes. If you went and put over that one, why, you'd have us all on the mat. The old lady of Kent might be listening in, we can't let you broadcast that." So I looked my list of songs up to please the listening throng. I said, "Now here's a good one, the Vulgar Boatman's song." But they hated vulgar boatmen and discouraged vulgar chat. And songs about rude sailors are barred. We can't let you broadcast that. So I looked my list of songs up and found an army one. There's something about a soldier, but they said that can't be done. There's something about a soldier would get over nice and pat. To a sergeant's wife with 14 kids, we can't let you broadcast that. So I looked my list of songs up. The position was getting grave. I said, "Now here's a nautical song, a life on the ocean wave." They said, "Life on the ocean wave with all these cruises on the mat? Why, you're advertising the steamship lines. We can't let you broadcast that." So I looked my list of songs up. I was getting fed up to the roots. "Now here's a good song by Kipling, a military song called Boots." He said, "My dear good fellow, do you realize what you're at? You're advertising a chemistry firm. We can't let you broadcast that." So I looked my list of songs up and I said, "Now here's a gem. No one can be offended if I sing Jerusalem." But they all collapsed. "Jerusalem? Be careful what you're at. Why, Hitler might be listening in. We can't let you broadcast that." So I looked my list of songs up and produced a drinking song. But they said, "This is published by Boozy." Dear, 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 that's all wrong. The song's marked Sing with Spirit, too. Why, it's like a brewery vat. It's two in a bar. That's barred as well. We can't let you broadcast that. So I packed my list of songs up and said, "Hang it, I won't sing. Would you like some Adagio dancing or a spot of conjuring? Trick cycling, walk the tightrope, I'm a darn good acrobat." And I'd love to tell you what they said, but I can't even record that.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.